but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Beautiful sunny day. I don't know why I feel the need to point that out. Probably because we get a bad rap with our weather. Steven, you like a nice sunny day?
Oh, beautiful day out today. Yeah, I took a little lunch and went and sat outside for a little bit. Felt great. I think we talk about it, John, because we know like tomorrow it's going to be pouring rain again. 45 out. So we gotta, you gotta celebrate when we can.
I'm really inconsistent with kind of my activities as it pertains to the weather. And I know that phrase may confuse you, but maybe you relate to me. But like I have a Traeger smoker, meat smoker, Traeger, grill in the backyard. And I don't have the cover on it because it's sunny. And then I know that I'm going to forget to put the cover on it. I'm very inconsistent. And I'll be like, it's sunny. I don't need to put the cover on it. And then like 2 days from now when it's pouring, I'll be sitting somewhere going, ah, man, I didn't put the cover on that thing. I don't know if you have those issues.
I do because, yeah, we actually barbecued last night and I don't think I put the cover on.
You're right.
I think Coach Vaughn might have, but I definitely did not. So I maybe have to go home and do that.
You need to get on that. The other thing I do is I leave my car windows rolled down sometimes because it's a nice day.
Ooh.
And then the next day I go, oh, not so nice. All right, we got Tyson Alger coming up, 424. He writes for i5corridor.com. He's doing something kind of cool this month as he is previewing a lot of the Big Ten teams that are coming from the Pac-12 going into the Big Ten. He had a piece the other day, caught my eye. I asked him, you want to come on and talk about it? I think it'd be a good conversation about Oregon, Washington, UCLA, and USC heading off to the Big Ten conference. Washington State, have they hired a basketball coach yet? Where are they at on that? Like, I should know that, but have you seen anything? Washington State hired a basketball coach yet? I noticed one of the coaches in the Big Sky Conference turned them down. And people were asking me, is that a bad thing for Washington State? And, I don't know what the latest is, Stephen. If you see anything on that, let me know. But it appeared as though Montana State coach Matt Logie has turned down Washington State. He's staying at Montana State. And I want to be clear here. Like, him turning that job down, yeah, it's probably bad for Washington State, but I get the logic of what he's saying. Like, he doesn't know where they're going to be competing in 2 years. And I think that's a big question that Washington State has to answer and Oregon State has to answer is, they have to tell their basketball players, where are you playing next year? Okay, you're playing against WCC teams, but where are you playing in 2 years? They don't know. And I think if you're Scott Ruick at Oregon State, I'll use him as an example because he's coming off a great season. I think it's a different conversation because he can turn to his players and he can go, hey, we're going to schedule some big-time non-conference games. We're going to play this WCC heavy schedule. Stay with me. Help me kick butt. Let's continue this thing. And then in a year, the plan would be we're in a better position, better place, better conference. Just need a year with you. And he may have the trust of players like Reagan Beers, Talia von Olhoffen, Tamia Gardner in particular, those three. He may have the trust that they go, okay, look, we'll give you a year. And then, because the uncertainty, I think, is going to be too much for people who have no proof of performance. You have no relationship with your coach. You're a recruit, Stephen Vaughn. I come to you, I say, I just took the Washington State job. We're going to play against the WCC teams this year. We're not sure what we're doing next year. You and I have no relationship. We have no proof of performance. We haven't been in the trenches together. I don't know if you're going to come play for me.
Yeah, 100%. And then because the thing about Washington State is, like, you're not, it's not, you know, no offense to Pullman. I've never even been there. But from what I hear, it's not like the best of spots to be like, hey, I want to go play in Pullman, Washington. But what you had was you played in the Pac-12 and you played against all these different schools, you know, USC, UCLA, Arizona, all these big time programs. Like that was the selling point of what you're going to do. You can say you're a Pac-12 player. Where now when you're going to play in the West Coast Conference, it's not as good. And now, even after that, like you said, it's unknown what's going to happen in a year or two. Like, is it going to be the West Coast Conference? Are you going to get back? Like, it's such a ever-changing world. It would be so hard to get any type of commitment there and say, yeah, I want to play here for, you know, for 4 years or for 3 years. Like, if I'm an athlete, I'm looking to go elsewhere to try to get to a better spot. Where, you know, if I want to play in front of my family, like, I can probably do that and get to a bigger and better conference. Now, you talk about the head coach. You're right. The Montana State coach, he was offered the job. He did not take it. He apparently got a pay bump from Montana State. So, apparently, they're on the same level as Washington State. But Jim Shaw, the associate head coach, he was not even considered being named head coach just a couple days ago. So, really, there's no momentum on the Washington State hire as their head basketball coach.
Yeah, and the thing about Shaw, it's weird because – that's the move I would have made if I was Kirk Schultz, the Washington State president. I probably would have just handed the keys to the next guy and said, hey, we can wait. We'll wait. You know, we'll make time for it. There's been some talk about Bob Huggins. Some baggage there. Okay? Like more than just a carry-on and a personal item worth of baggage with Bob Huggins. There is, you know, he's got some bags that we're weighing at the airport and we're going, you might need to repack these. That's how much baggage the guy has. But the Cougar Collective, the NIL Collective at Washington State, followed Huggy's Twitter account. And it raised some eyebrows with Washington State fans who said, oh, are they going in this direction? But I will step a little further back and say this. I watched this. And I've watched schools do this kind of thing with different levels of success over the years. Fresno State took a flyer on Jerry Tarkanian. He got him to the NCAA tournament. He helped them build an arena. He served a purpose. He got to have a nice finish to his career. They got something out of it as well. Those kinds of relationships with broken coaches who may have had their careers derailed can sometimes work out. They come with risk. It can be a high wire act in high winds. I don't know if you've ever seen a high wire act in high winds. I have. It's true. We watched the Flying Willindas one time in high winds outside, and I saw the fear in their eyes. I can tell you that Bob Huggins at Washington State would be a big risk for Washington State. But I kind of wonder, Stephen, are they in a position where they should take a risk?
Well, we know Bob Huggins can coach, right? Like, that's the thing is, you know, he can coach. And you look at a guy like Chris Beard, who got, you know, booted out of Texas for the alleged stuff that he did with his fiance, I believe, at the time. Maybe they're married now. But then he goes to Ole Miss and they're successful there. So, like, there is a chance where if you take a risk on one of these guys, it pays off and you become a really good program. Then they probably leave and go somewhere else. I think that would be the other concern with Bob Huggins. But
yeah,
I think right now, if you are Washington State and you're trying to be legitimate, yeah, maybe you do take the risk and take on Bob Huggins, because the guy can coach, the guy can recruit, he can get his team in there. He always has a certain play style that fits his system, and he knows how to get those kids, and they're going to be really successful. Like, he's one of the better X's
and O's coaches. He's going to get guys.
One of the best X's and O's coaches out there. So, I mean, I wouldn't be against it. Like, there is the off-court issues and the controversy, but man, like, you're going to
take that risk. What do you do?
Yes, you do. You're getting an elite coach, I think. And I think right now for Washington State, you need to prove to the rest of college athletics that you are legitimate and you're investing in your programs. And I think right now, Washington State, even looking, you know, the football team has invested a little bit, but you lose your Pat Chun, you lose your head basketball coach, you're losing a lot of stuff. You got to show something like, hey, no, we're still a legitimate program that deserves to be in the Power 4, Power 5 era.
I would also take that risk. I would also think about potentially taking that risk. Now, you saw something on Twitter where, did you see Bronny James is entering the portal? Or is that a fake account that is saying Bronny James is entering the portal?
I don't know, because, you know, Dick Weiss, it's a 23,000 followers. He is, you know, he's an award-winning
New York Daily News.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I don't think it's true. I haven't seen anything else tweeted about it, but he has said that Bronny is entering the transfer portal. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm start digging in, but I've been searching frantically this last like 5 minutes ever since I said that to you.
I see it nowhere else reported. Well, we'll keep an eye on it and we'll get you caught up. We've got Punch and Audio, a trip around the world of sports. Let's do it.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with the University of Oregon. They suffered a loss in the run-up to spring football. Running backs coach Carlos Lachlan leaving for Ohio State. Here's Dan Lanning talking about it. Punch it.
Yeah, it's football. It's the reality. You know, Carlos did an unbelievable job for us. You know, my goal is when we bring people here, we get to advance them to opportunities that make sense for them. I know how great Oregon is, right? And I know this, the reality is not really concerned about winning the press conference. You know, he did a great job for us here. But when we hired him, he was a relatively unknown coach and did a really, really good job. The key for us is who do we replace him with? Right. And this is a great opportunity. Transitions give you an opportunity to get better. Right. So that's our goal. We're going to go get better. We're going to bring somebody in here who can do a really good job with our organization. We got a lot of young coaches right now in our organization that do an unbelievable job. So moving on. Right. Excited for the next move.
Look, he's got to say that, but it's an unfortunate loss. And it's a coach who's bounced around a little bit. But losing him is one thing. Losing him to Ohio State, quite another. I think in the end, if you're Oregon, you still feel good about where you are, but you don't want this kind of stuff to happen. You don't want to have to replace coaches. You don't want to especially have to replace coaches that are leaving your program to go over to Ohio State. Dylan Gabriel is the quarterback for now at Oregon. He's got a lot of experience. Dan Lanning talking about Gabriel's arrival. Punch it.
Yep, he gets it, right? Our guys get it. Dylan's a guy that gets it. You know, we talk about connections, one of the DNA traits in this program, and that requires time away from ball together. So I think he knows that that's really important for him to be in sync with the guys he's playing with, and that's, you know, will pay off in the future.
In sync will pay off. He's got great receivers. He's got good running backs behind him. He's got a lot of experience. It'll be a Big Ten schedule, though, for Oregon. It'll not just be having to get by Washington or USC. You're going to add Ohio State. You're going to add Michigan. You're going to add some of that travel. I think it'll be very interesting to see how it goes for Dan Lanning in year number three. He's got some momentum, though, and proof of performance. It was Caitlin Clark, 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds, and a win over LSU. She's in the Final Four. Here's Caitlin Clark. Punch it.
To be honest, no. I feel like we prepare for this game. We focus on Iowa. We do what Iowa does, and we'll come out on top. And that was kind of Coach Bluder's message. It's not about last year. You worry too much about the past. You know, you're going to get caught up in that. It's about being present, being where your feet are. Don't worry about being in the Final Four, be in this moment, be in the Elite Eight. You know, enjoy that and soak that in. And, you know, that's what's going to allow you to win 40 minutes. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, I thought we just played a really good basketball game. When they went on their runs, we always had an answer, and that's all you can ask of your team.
Caitlin Clark was fantastic. Great win for Iowa. Great game. Not just a great women's basketball game, it was just a great game. An emotional end for Juju Watkins. USC loses to UConn in the Elite Eight. UConn goes on to another Final Four. Juju Watkins, fantastic freshman, got emotional at the post game. Punch it.
Yeah, I think everything and more. I mean, of course, we fell short in the end. But like Lindsay said, it's been a great ride. I have the best teammates in the world. And I'm just glad that Next question.
Emotional player, emotional stakes. Excited to see what she does with her career. You know, I kept thinking as I was watching USC down the stretch, they have got to be more balanced next year. It can't just be her. Talia von Ohlhofen with some news. Thanking Beaver Nation on Twitter today for the last 3 years. And writing, given the circumstances, I have decided that it is best for me and my future to close this chapter of my life. I will be entering the portal as a graduate transfer to use my last year of eligibility elsewhere. Talia von Ohlhofen leaving Oregon State. Here she is talking about her relationship with Scott Ruick. Punch it.
I think just our relationship over the years, I've had some ups and downs and with the program, just figuring so much out and having a rough freshman year, turning around, kind of rebuilding, only went in 4 games, and then going through my injury last year and not really being able to perform the way I want to physically. It's just been a ride, and I think just maintaining that relationship and problem solving with him, and I feel like this year we've gotten a lot closer, and like you said, I feel like I'm working with him and we're a good team, and so I don't know, I'm very grateful for him, and so much of our success as a team this year is credit to him and what he's built, and the culture of this team is just something that he emphasizes so much.
She's on the move now in the portal. She said, quote, "What a ride. Once a Beav, always a Beav," end quote. Steven, you agree with that?
Sadly, I do. The unknown of what is going to happen in the future and the fact that they do know what's going to happen next year. Going to the West Coast Conference, playing there. It's not the Pac-12. And we saw the Pac-12, how good it was in women's basketball. I mean, the best conference in the nation. We saw, you know, what was it, 3 teams in the Elite Eight out of the Pac-12 or Sweet 16 with Stanford as well. Like, you're going to the West Coast Conference. That's not a good conference compared to the Pac-12. And if you're Talia von Ohlhofen, you can have your pick of what school you want to go to, where you want to play at, and you can play on the biggest of stages. I don't blame her. It's sad that this is the state we're in right now for Oregon State sports and Washington State's athletics as well, but I don't blame her one bit. Like, go do what you have to do, and if you're going to get some NIL money, do that. Be awesome, and go play on the biggest of stages because that's what you deserve to play. Like, I get you can build with Oregon State, but it's not as certain on where you're going to go after that.
I think it's interesting to note in her announcement, which I have retweeted if you want to read it. You know, she talks about her last year of eligibility. Next season, Oregon State will play a WCC schedule. And so for Talia, this is it's 1 year. Do you want to play a WCC schedule or not? For others, Reagan Beers, Tamia Gardner, maybe it's a different conversation. I reached out to and I was in contact with Scott Ruick, the Oregon State coach, in the last 24 hours. I'm efforting him for the show. I thought we'd have him today. It makes sense to me now why I have not heard back from him today. He has probably been meeting with players, talking with players, figuring this stuff out. But kind of a sad thing for Oregon State. Like, you know, it's sad to see Jonathan Smith leave. It's sad to see Oregon State get left behind. It's now sad, I think, to see players in a sport, on a team that has been wildly successful, saying, you know, I need to close this chapter of my life and move on to the next best thing. I don't think this will ever not be sad. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA. LeBron James telling a story. Eric Spoelstra studied Oregon's spread offense and modeled some of what the Heat wanted to do after the Ducks. Punch it.
I'm going to tell you when it all changed. Obviously, my first year there, you know, played great basketball, got all the way to the finals, losing the finals. Spo is the reason why we were a better team. And our team was more assembled properly. That summer, he went to Oregon and hung out with Chip Kelly.
Oh, interesting.
He when we lost to Dallas, he went to Oregon and hung out with Chip Kelly and learned the spread offense and tried to figure out if he could translate that to basketball. And don't know the super conversations that him and Chip had, but I know when he came back to us, he knew in order for us to reach our potential, one, I had to be 10 times better than I was in that previous June finals. But Chris Bosh had to go to the five. He had to start working on his corner three faithfully every day after practice. Corner three every day after practice.
I love this story. I love the crossover between college football and basketball in the NBA. I love everything about that, and I'm not surprised by it. Eric Spoelstra outside the box as a thinker. Chip Kelly, same way. I understand how that works. Spacing, I could understand how that works. Oh, everybody looking for an angle. Why not try to find one with the guy who has exploited angles? From a basketball standpoint, Steven, it makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And the way it was back then, you know, he's talking about the 2011 finals when they lose to Dallas. Remember, LeBron was really bad in that finals. And what they did was Dallas really, they clogged the key because that's the way it was. At that point, the big guys weren't necessarily shooters in the corner. And so Chris Bosh and whoever your big guy was had to, they'd stay down low. And so guys like Tyson Chandler, Roy Hibbert, they would stand in the key basically and be right there to meet LeBron at the rim. And so with that, as LeBron's saying, Spoelstra said, look, we need to shorten it up. We need to be smaller, more athletic. Bosh, you're going to play the five rather than the four. We're going to spread you out. That way, Tyson Chandler, Roy Hibbert, Steven Adams, all these guys that are protecting the hoop, Kendrick Perkins, all these guys protecting the hoop can't just stand in the key for LeBron. Now it's going to be a one-on-one. The lane's going to be open for Dwayne Wade, for LeBron to drive, cut, make plays off of that. And then when Bosh is in those threes, that's tough to guard, man. So it was kind of the new evolution of the game we see now. It's kind of like with the spread offense, you know, shorter, faster, quicker, and spread out the defense. I loved it. I loved the outside thing in the box, like you said, of Spoelstra to say, look, let's go to Chip Kelly, one of the innovators of this offense.
Nick Cody, former Oregon offensive lineman who's listening to the show, just texted me and said Coach Spo came, talked to the team, spent a whole weekend of fall camp. He remembers it. That the precursor to the Heat and LeBron having big-time success. Finally, Ronel Blanco facing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This is a guy, 30-year-old pitcher, making his eighth career start. He's got a no-hitter going. Can he get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. out for the no-no? Punch it.
Ground ball. Dubon throws to first. No-hitter! Ronel Blanco in his eighth career start. The 30-year-old makes magic on April Fool's Day.
First no-hitter of the season. Guy had a daughter 6 days later. Got a no-hitter. Pretty good week for Ronel Blanco. Leave it here. Tyson Alger, I-5 Corridor. We're going to talk some college football next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
The running back leaks out, and the inside pass, and that is going to get in the end zone. Troy Franklin scoring on the final play of the half. 6 touchdowns in the first half.
That's for Bo Nix with 6 touchdowns. Here to talk about Oregon and some of the other teams headed off to the Big Ten Conference, Tyson Alger, i5corridor.com. Tyson has published a piece this week in which he kind of talked about the departing Pac-12 teams that go off to the Big Ten. Tyson, thanks for making time.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's sunny and beautiful. What are you doing a sunny, beautiful day like this besides this radio hit?
You know, I woke up this morning and I drove down to the Park Box. Portland State was having their first spring practice of the season. So I went down and had a cup of coffee, watched Portland State get underway and was promptly awarded with a $50 parking ticket. So that's the length. Those are the lengths that I go to bring my readers the happenings of what's going on with the Vikings. So
I love that.
Been a good day.
How do the Vikings look? Quick assessment on them.
You know, this is probably going to be the best team they've had in 4 or 5 years, but it comes at a time when the Big Sky is as good as it's ever been. I think they have 9 opponents this year that were previously in the top 25, but, you know, they have a fourth-year starting quarterback in Donte Chachere. They have some talent at wide receiver. They have a really good running back core if they can stay healthy, but the big thing for the Vikings is going to be whether or not they can stop anybody. That was their problem last year, and Bruce Barnum this morning was optimistic that maybe this is the season that starts to kind of turn, but you know how it is at Portland State. It takes a lot of effort to get that ball moving up the hill. So I think it'll be better, but you know, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I like that they've got a quarterback. I actually like that level of play. That league in particular seems to be benefiting from some of the transfer portal stuff because they're getting a bunch of young players in that league that aren't getting scholarships at other schools who are saying, hey, I can use this as a stepping stone.
Well, that's one thing. If you look at the last 2 years of Portland State's recruiting, you know, this is a program that hasn't traditionally been a recruiting powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, but they've put together consecutive top 10 FCS recruiting classes. And I think a lot of it is because of the kind of the way that the FBS recruiting is going. It's you're seeing programs like Oregon take a lot more guys that are ready-made out of the portal and that sort of thing than taking a risk on some high school kids. So there are far more pieces that fall through the cracks. Of course, that makes for a tricky situation for those SCS teams, because if those guys come in, obviously you're going to take advantage of it, but you're also having to then try to keep those kids throughout the course of their career. So you want guys to be good, but not too good, or else you're going to lose them pretty quickly.
You did a great job in sort of previewing the four teams from the Pac-12 that'll be moving on to the Big Ten, including Oregon and Washington, of course, UCLA and USC among them. You know, and you ranked them, and you know, what made you sort of take that look at this time of year, and what are you looking for there?
Yeah, you know, it's, well, the main reason why I took that look is because you kind of felt like all the moving and the pieces were about to kind of finish moving around, and then we saw Carlos Laughlin leave this morning for Ohio State, so maybe not quite the stability I was thinking, but just, you know, it's spring. I feel like the Pac-12 is in the rear view. I know we're finishing it up with basketball, but at this point, like, Oregon's opposition is the Big Ten. It's the Ohio States, it's the Michigans, it's the Penn States of the world. And I just kind of wanted to, as a reporter around spring, you kind of start gauging how the teams are going to be balanced against the other ones. And we're just completely foreign to, you know, how this looks for these teams in the Big Ten. And, you know, for the past decade, it's been pretty darn easy to pencil Oregon at the top of the Pac-12 or assume that they're going to hang around there. And some of that has been because of the deficiencies of a USC or a Washington and the ups and downs that they've had. But this is big boy football now, John. Like, it's you're not going to benefit just because one program's down, because there's going to be 3 or 4 that are ready to charge. And, you know, you're kind of seeing the ecosystem already kind of evolve there with the Ohio State poaching Chip Kelly and Oregon's running backs coach. Everyone's gearing up and getting ready for this battle.
Yeah, let's talk about Carlos Laughlin. And he gets to Oregon in January of 2022. And he had previously been at Western Kentucky and Florida State, where he had helped recruit, and then Memphis. I know that there had been some talk about, you know, him having relationships with that had ties to Willie Taggart, of course. And but losing him to Ohio State, in your mind, how big of a loss is this for Oregon?
I don't think the actual positional loss is that terrible, because you know, this is an Oregon coaching staff that has a ton of cohesion. This is probably the least attrition that they've had. I mean, shoot, it's been 2 years in a row where they've had the same coordinators. I can't remember the last time that's been the case for the Ducks. So actually replacing a running backs coach, albeit a good one like Carlos Laughlin, isn't going to be an impossible task. I just kind of worry about, like, what this shows as the hierarchy of the conference, as I was alluding to before. Like, it's not necessarily a big deal to lose Carlos Laughlin, but it is a big deal to lose him if your direct new rival is viewing it as an upgrade for themselves. So, I think we're going to be in an era now where you see a lot more moving within the conference, and you're going to see some good newspaper material for game weeks, because I think it's going to be pretty fun when the Ducks and the Buckeyes play this season, because there's already plenty of on the line between those two teams, but now you get a little bit of the coaching rivalry as well.
Does Oregon have a counter move to Ryan Day adding Chip Kelly and Laughlin? Do you foresee this being a little bit of a arms race where Oregon might go out and try to add a coach or two? Maybe not this offseason, but do they start to think in those terms as Ohio State is going, hey, we're looking for any edge?
Dude, Dan Lanning is always analyzing the game and seeing where his program is deficient, where he can improve. And if he sees that a school like Ohio State is bolstering their staff either at one position or even in auxiliary positions, if that's a deficiency that the Ducks have, I think Lanning will at the very least ask for it, whether or not he's able to, you know, take a former offensive genius and get him, convince him to go from a head coaching role to his offensive coordinator. You know, that kind of remains to be seen. But yeah, like I don't see Lanning like taking this just in stride and saying, like, you know, we're just going to wear this one on the chin. Like, I think the Ducks are going to be the aggressors here too moving forward.
Tyson Alger, i5corridor.com. I noticed you're not paywalling. Are you doing a month where you're not going to paywall?
Yeah, that it might not be the smartest thing, John, you know, giving away this stuff for free. But, you know, one of the things that I kind of admired at when you launched your website was I've always thought you were a really good business mind, and seeing the way that I think that first month you had it in front of the paywall, so a lot of people could kind of come look and tour around and see that, you know, there's quality writing and sports reporting, that sort of thing. And I just figured with it being spring football this month and, you know, kind of diving into the Timbers and Thorns coverage, I figured this might be the time to, you know, put some new paint on the house and invite people in for a little bit of a lunch. You know, come check out the i5 corridor for free this month. And if you like it, would really appreciate it if you came and supported the rest of the way.
I like that because it gives people a chance to sample, check it out, see what it's about, and makes it really accessible to people. When you look at those four teams that are leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten, how does Oregon, USC, Washington, UCLA stack up in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Oregon number one, not only because they have a great current roster, but they have some stability within the coaching staff. And out of the four programs, they have pretty widely considered the most successful NIL venture out of the four of them. Then I'm going to go USC. You know, obviously Lincoln Riley's stature isn't quite what it was 2 years ago, but that's still a school that's going to be able to recruit. Like, you still have quarterbacks coming out of your backyard. And if you've looked at their 2025 class, they've gone in and pulled out two really good defensive linemen from Georgia too. So they're addressing that defensive issue. For number three, I'm going to go Washington. You've seen the proof of concept with the Huskies of how it can work, but also you've seen everything that's happened this offseason, and I think it just brings too much instability to rank them any higher. And then you have UCLA. It's a school that has no good recruits. It's kind of on their back heels with their coaching staff, and I don't expect the Rose Bowl to exactly be full for the non-premier games next season.
Yeah, and I think the whole departure of Chip Kelly at UCLA is interesting to me. Like, I actually don't think they had a chance with him. They really don't have a chance without him. How ugly could it be at UCLA? Is that a 4-win team? Is it a 7-win team? Where's the ceiling for the Bruins?
Ooh, the ceiling, I'm probably going to say, like, I have to take a look at their schedule to see what they might be able to squeak out of non-conference. But, you know, considering that a guy who started half their games of the season last year is now Oregon's backup and their coach is an offensive coordinator somewhere, like, this could be a really, really ugly season in UCLA. And, you know, I'm not quite sure how quickly it can get better, too. I think their recruiting class was in, like, the 60s this year. It was, like, one of the worst out of the entire Big Ten. Unless Deshaun Foster has something magic planned up his sleeves, I think it's going to be a long rebuild for them over there in Westwood.
Yeah, and I think the potential there is probably 5-6 wins at best. Washington and Jed Fish, you say, you know, they've got proof of concept, but are you concerned that Fish comes into this and is in over his head to start with, or there's just been too much turnover with the AD and the coaching staff and losing Penix. I mean, well, if I'm a Washington fan, I'm a little anxious right now.
Yeah, and you're completely right to be. I mean, 3 months ago, this team was the class of the Pac-12, and they had their rival beat 3 years in a row. I mean, 3 games in a row. Like, it couldn't be better to be a Huskies fan. The one thing I will say, though, with this transition from Kalen DeBoer to Jed Fish is I do think Jed Fish is a better program builder if you're going from, like, the bottom level. You know, obviously, DeBoer brought in Penix and, you know, had some plug-and-play guys, but Fish is a really good recruiter. Like, they were able to build that talent base up at Arizona really fast, and they're able to develop it as well. So I think if you're looking kind of long-term and building that sort of thing, I think Fish is going to do a great job. But, you know, this is also modern college football where you just saw Fish lead one job, and he couldn't really give a straight answer when was asked if this next one was his dream job. So it's, you know, who knows with Washington's financial constraints moving forward, they're only getting the half a share. And obviously it's not a great sign if you've seen two athletic directors leave in the last 6 months, but yeah, you know, I think Fish will do okay with what he has available to him.
Lincoln Riley, you alluded to the shine coming off. He also is losing Caleb Williams. What is USC's biggest concern right now as it moves to the Big Ten?
I'm not worried about them reloading with skilled players. I mean, every 2 or 3 years, it seems like they have some big quarterback recruit coming in, and, you know, they grow them in their backyard there, and same goes for receivers and running backs. The two biggest issues for USC last season were they couldn't protect Caleb Williams at all. If you remember that Oregon game, I came away so impressed with Caleb Williams after that game just because he was running for dear life the entire darn game. So offensive line is going to be huge for them, especially moving to the Big Ten where you have that sort of kind of body types. But then it's just defense. I mean, the Trojans can score. We've seen it for the last 2 years, but they haven't been able to stop anybody. And it's put them in situations where they finally look like they're going to have that ascension, and then they get smacked by Utah in the Pac-12 championship game, and then they have a down year this year. So, yeah, I think they're still going to be able to put together quite skillful offensive teams, but they really have to figure out what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball there.
Oregon's got Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, talking about him today.
Yep, he gets it, right? Our guys get it. Dylan's a guy that gets it. You know, we talk about connections, one of the DNA traits in this program, and that requires time away from ball together. So I think he knows that that's really important for him to be in sync with the guys he's playing with, and that's, you know, will pay off in the future.
Dylan Gabriel, what do you expect this to look like for Oregon?
I expect it to come out looking like a well-oiled machine. You know, it hurts to lose a Bo Nix, and you might think people are crazy for not saying Oregon's in as bad of a spot as Washington for them losing to Michael Penix. But with Oregon, you have a 14,000-yard career passer coming in to replace a 15,000-yard career passer. Like, this is experience. This overall roster is better than it was last year. I feel like Nix might have been the prologue for the Ducks. And I think with the improved offensive line, with some of the guys that you have coming, especially at wide receiver, Terrence Ferguson at tight end, they needed a guy who could come in and instantly figure out and operate this offense and lead them to a very successful season. And I think that's what Dylan Gabriel will do. I don't think he's going to be quite as athletic with his feet as Bo Nix was, but he has a completion percentage that's right around the same. Like, it's a high efficient, fast spread offense that I think is going to look in some aspects similar to last year. But yeah, it's this is a very good quarterback that they came in to run a very good offense.
Is it enough for Oregon to be as good as they were a year ago, or do they have to be better? Do they have to take a step forward?
I think they have to take a step forward because I think the goal is for them to win the national championship. And obviously last year, that team wasn't good enough to win the national championship. I expect the rest of the college football to be better next year too. I don't think last year's national champion, Michigan, was nearly as good as Georgia was the two prior years before that. And I think eventually you're going to get another team or two that's that good. And so I think especially with everything consolidating towards the top, like, these teams have to keep getting better year in and year out. And that's kind of the expectations that are put upon them. Now, obviously things change a little bit starting next year with the expansion of the college football playoff, and you're going to be able to say, like, this was a playoff team. But, you know, I don't really think that's what Oregon's shooting for right now, not with kind of all of the things that they have going in the right direction for them at the moment.
Talia Von Olhoff, and this is off college football, but Oregon State's star guard jumping in the transfer portal, saying that this chapter is ending for her. She's going to have her last year somewhere else. How concerned should fans be for Scott Ruick and Oregon State women's basketball?
You know, that was unexpected. I mean, she's a fantastic player, and I mean, that kind of caught me off guard when I saw that right before coming on. But, you know, I think if there's one coach that you want to buy into right now around the state and in terms of putting it together, I mean, Scott Ruick's probably the one right now. I mean, this was such a fantastic season for them, making the Elite Eight and being really the only consistently fun basketball team to watch in the state this year. Obviously, losing to Lee is a big part of that, but they have a lot of young guards. They have a lot of veterans returning as well. Like, I think they'll be okay. Obviously, this is a hit, and, you know, some of the verbiage in there, too, of, like, I think she used, like, considering the circumstances, which I'm assuming is alluding to, like, the changing of the conferences and the changing of the conferences and everything. Like, that's not necessarily what you want to see, especially, like, 2 days after your season came to an end. But overall, I think Oregon State's going to be fine, and I think they're going to continue to be a very, very well-coached and well-run program moving forward.
Different on the men's side, Jordan Pope now telling on 3 Sports he's getting in the portal. That is a steeper hill, I think, for Wayne Tinkle, yeah, because he doesn't have proof of performance or great culture in his locker room to kind of harness right now. Jordan Pope on the move. What is Wayne Tinkle's move?
I don't know, man. That's a tough one. Like, Pope was really fun to watch play this year, and that was kind of like one of the saving graces of Beavers basketball is, you know, since they had their own Elite Eight run, they've absolutely bottomed out. And, you know, the last year at least, they played like some acceptable basketball. I mean, shoot, Pope had that game winner. But it was kind of tough watching them late in the season and to see like really good players kind of ball out and to just kind of have that in the back of your head of like, these guys might be vulnerable to the transfer portal. And so, you know, I'm not sure how they shake out with next year's kind of hybrid WCC schedule. But I think that's a tougher uphill just because you haven't, outside of 1 year, you haven't seen Wayne Tinkle do anything that Scott Ruick has with that sort of situation.
Yeah, and I think it's a really tough position to be in. You're going to be all over the Big Ten, all over the Pacific Northwest teams as they continue to play. i5corridor.com. Tyson has lifted the paywall this month, so in the month of April, you want to check out his work. i5corridor.com. Grab a free subscription there. Tyson, thank you for making time, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, really appreciate it, John. Have a great day.
There he is. Sunny days. So much news today. Talia Von Ohlhofen, Oregon State, in the portal. Jordan Pope, Oregon State, in the portal. We'll talk about that. Plus, Bronny James, is he on the move as well? And where are these players going? We'll cover it next.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Going to be a lot of movement in the portal. This Bronny James thing feels like it is, feels like it's accurate. Haven't seen it widely reported, but USC freshman guard Bronny James, according to Dick Weiss, entering the transfer portal. He says, good for him, needs to get away from the Hollywood hype. I don't know if you can get away from the Hollywood hype if you're Bronny James. You kind of bring the circus with you. Not sure if that's it. In other news, Oregon State guard Jordan Pope telling on 3 Sports that he plans to enter the transfer portal. This is the same Jordan Pope who told me minutes after Oregon State was eliminated from the Pac-12 tournament and their season ended. He told me that, this was a for now thing, that he was on board until he's not.
I'm not really sure. I haven't really put much thought into that or, really let the outside noise get into my head. I try to stay away from that. I'm just focused on it now, you know. At this given moment, I just want to, you know, really reflect on the game, reflect on the season, see how I could get better, what as a team, as a program, we could do to get better, to reach the next level. And when that time comes, I guess, you know, we'll cross that bridge when it's time, you know. I'll take some time to myself, you know, talk with my family and have discussions and whatnot. But, you know, I'm really proud of the group that we had this year. I really believe we could have done a lot better job. And, you know, we'll just see what happens this summer. And I love Coach Tingle, his staff. I love my brothers in the locker room. And I love the city of Corvallis and Beaver Nation as a whole. So I guess, you know, I'm all in for them until the time being.
I'm all in for them for the time being. And I had an Oregon State staff member who I was talking to about this clip. They heard this show and they heard me talking about Jordan Pope, who said, gosh, if he would have just ended it at I'm all in with my team, it would have been fine. But when he added the for the time being, we all kind of knew Jordan Pope on the move. I had heard rumors and speculation, and I don't like to deal in rumors and speculation, but I had heard rumors and speculation that Pope's handlers were asking for mid six figures, $500,000 in NIL money. I don't think he's that kind of player. I don't think he's that kind of player. I think he is a guy who is a six-figure player, but I don't think he's that guy. And so my concern is, I hope he's getting good advice. I hope he doesn't have an agent who's just telling him what he wants to hear, because that's what some agents do. Meanwhile, in other news, Talia von Olhoffen, Oregon State women's basketball player, great, fun player to watch, great player, plays with a lot of heart. She has announced that she is entering the transfer portal. So she will be on the move. Her final year of eligibility, 1 year left, will be played somewhere else. Oregon State women's basketball program is going to play a WCC schedule next year. And Talia is looking for something a little more challenging. All right, the 5 at 5 is coming up. We have a busy 5 o'clock hour. I hope you're here for it.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
A lot of news that we have to digest. We need to digest this hour. If you're just tuning in, Talia von Olhoffen, Oregon State star guard, announcing on social media that she has decided it's best for her and her future to close this chapter of her life. She's entering the portal as a graduate transfer. She'll use her last year of eligibility elsewhere. Thanked Coach Scott Ruick, thanked Oregon State, said she will always and forever be a Beav. You decide for yourself if you're okay with the transfer portal, but not okay with somebody saying, hey, I'm always a Beav or I'm always a Duck while they're leaving. Show business, not show friends. Jordan Pope, along those lines, Oregon State star guard, telling media that he's entering the transfer portal. It's not to say these players couldn't reverse course and come back, but it is to say that it's very likely that Oregon State's losing a couple of star basketball players. Bronny James, rumors swirling that the USC, I don't want to call him a star, USC celebrity player, may be entering the portal himself. Dick Weiss, New York Daily News, reporting that. There are other reports about Bronny James. CBS Sports saying he could declare for the draft. Athlon Sports saying there's uncertainty around him. Bronny James, or LeBron James Jr., I think needs to another year in college. I think it would be a real disservice to rush him into the NBA. I don't think it's what's best for him, but again, show business, not show friends. Anna's in the studio. She's got the 5 at 5. I'm sorry if I stole some thunder there, but those are things people really need to know about. What do you make of that? What do you make of the transfer portal activity?
I mean, it's sad, you know, for Oregon State. I think they had a good thing going there. And, of course, I was hoping, I think along with a lot of other people, that they could keep the team together and make another run at it next year. But, hey, I don't blame Talia. I mean, you know, she's doing what everyone else is doing, which is you got to look out for yourself and go where the opportunity you feel is best for you.
Yeah.
I don't know about Bronny going to the NBA, though. I think that's ridiculous.
I think Talia's a little different story than some others in that, you know, last year she made a real commitment to come back to Oregon State. She could have left. She told Oregon State, I'll come back. I'm coming back for Scott Ruick. She's only got 1 year of eligibility left.
Mm-hmm.
And Oregon State's going to play this WCC schedule that feels a little experimental.
Yeah.
And so if I only had 1 year to play, I would be awfully tempted to get in the portal, too.
Well, isn't that the biggest story is that she said, given the circumstances in her in her note? That's what she put. Like, that's exactly what we've all been thinking.
Given the circumstances, I've decided it's best for me and my future to close this chapter of my life. There was a big paragraph before about how everything she gave to the program, wouldn't trade the experiences. She said this, though. I disagreed with this part. She said, I can confidently say I gave everything I had to leave this pro, and I gave everything I had to leave this program better than I found it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a program that went to the Final Four in 2016.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's not pretend that an Elite Eight run was, this was an aberration. This was, you know, Scott Ruick's third Elite Eight. You know, he's been to a couple Sweet 16s. He had a Final Four. Let's just say you gave everything you had, not that you left it better than you found it, because some of us have been here, you know, like Scott Ruick's kind of reading that going, you know, I get it. Like, you know, when you came into the program, there was a pandemic going on. I would like to say everything is better 4 years, 3 years removed from a pandemic.
I get what she's saying, though.
I do, but it, you know, like,
I think she just means that she gave it her all. She put everything into it, you know, thanks. But the ambiguity of what is happening is too much. And I got to go, you know, where I might have the opportunity and more certainty.
I'm all fine with all that. Yeah. I back her on all of that. And I like her style.
Yeah.
And I think she's been great for the program. And I think she's a tremendous competitor. And she's fun to watch. Selfishly, she was my favorite player to watch on that team.
Yeah.
Because Tamia Gardner is kind of the soul of that team and might be the best player. Reagan Beers, just a great post player, bright future, going to be a star. But Talia von Ohlhofen was the player that was everywhere on the court, on the ground, hitting the big three-pointer to beat UCLA earlier this season. Sacrificed a lot, I think, for the betterment of the team. Put her own selfish interests aside and shared the ball maybe more than other players would have in her position. But let's not pretend that Oregon State hadn't been to a Final Four before she got there, okay?
I question now, though, are others going to follow suit?
Maybe.
Because she was such a leader on that team. It's like, is she the first domino to fall here?
Well, it probably explains why Scott Ruick, who I was in contact with yesterday and this morning, you know, I want him on the show because I want to talk about some of this stuff. I have a feeling he is holed up meeting with players and trying to hold the line, so to speak.
Yeah.
The thing he has to do, and I don't know if kids are going to listen. I don't know if these players are going to listen. Like, Talia von Ohlhofen's different. But the thing Scott Ruick has to do is he has to convince those players, hey, this is the right place for you this next year. Not forever. But in the next year, we're going to go play this WCC schedule. And I don't know what's going to happen beyond that because I'm not in control of it. That's the message he has to say. But can you give me 1 year? Can Reagan Beers give me, can you give me your sophomore year? Now, if it looks like we're going nowhere in a year, then you'll have options. You'll still have options. But come into the, stay in the Oregon State fold and come into this WCC experimental year where we compete and know that we can get to the Elite Eight. We can get to the Final Four. We still think we can get to those places that matter in college basketball. And by the way, it's not your last dance like Talia von Ohlhofen mm-hmm. is facing her last dance.
Yeah. It's possible.
That's the pitch. That's the pitch.
Anyway. I wonder, because we've talked about, you know, her parents and how they were involved in sports, and I wonder how much of her decision, I can't imagine that it was an easy one for her. She plays with so much heart. I wonder how much of that decision had to do with, you know, conversations she was having with mom and dad.
Can you really run that risk, though? If you have 4 years of college, you're going to waste, not necessarily waste, but you're going to take 1 year of uncertainty of what's going to happen to say, yeah, I'm willing to, you know, risk it for that. And then if it goes bad, then I'm going to leave. Like, you only have four years.
But what would bad be? What would bad be in your mind? Because if I'm Reagan Beers or I am Tamia Gardner, I'm going, hey, if we keep this thing together, we can dominate the WCC. We can beat Gonzaga. We can be in the NCAA tournament mm-hmm. and get right back as a highly seeded team, and we can matter. We can do what we just did in the Pac-12. Now, is the WCC going to battle test them the way the Pac-12 did? No. But they could become Gonzaga of the WCC and get back to the NCAA tournament. So I even think a down year is like, hey, we made the tournament, we were a 5 seed.
Yeah, bad's the wrong word. Just, I guess, not as much fun because, I mean, no offense to Santa Clara, I'd rather be playing against Stanford or, you know, USC rather than Santa Clara. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I feel like if you're going to waste one of those years just to do that and then see, hopefully, maybe you can play those type of teams the next season, Oregon State can get back into a big conference. I don't know. I don't blame anybody that would want to enter the portal right now if I'm at Oregon State or Washington State. Just knowing the fact that you played in the Pac-12, you played against all these big-time schools, now you're going against the West Coast Conference. No offense to them. I love the West Coast Conference, but it's not even close, especially on the women's side.
I have no problem with Talia von Ohlhofen getting in the portal. I just kind of raised an eyebrow when I read, I left it better than I found it. You know, and granted, when she came into the program, it wasn't coming off of Final Four. So maybe she literally is saying, we played better this year than we did in my first year here. Mm-hmm. But I would remind her that there is a Final Four banner hanging in Gill Coliseum. So, you know, you could say, is the program better off now than it was 8 years ago, you know, in 2016? No, Scott Ruick was coming off of Final Four. Now he's coming off an Elite Eight. Like, you know, it's not like it's a great step down, but let's be accurate about what we're talking about.
Help me understand, and I don't want to belabor this too much longer, but help me understand the path. Like, so they play teams like Santa Clara and I believe Pepperdine's in like the WCC.
Yeah, they'll be in there with St. Mary's. And, you know, they should be the Oregon State women's program, unless there's a complete fleecing of the roster.
Sure.
Should win that conference, like, or be right at the top.
There was two teams from the West Coast Conference in the NCAA tournament, Portland and Gonzaga. The only reason Portland got in is because they made that upset. So it would have been a one-bid league where the Pac-12 had, what, you know, 7-8 schools in it.
Okay. And so theoretically, like, Oregon State's path to the tournament could be easier than it has been as a member of the Pac-12.
It could be.
As we know it.
It could be. It's also, it's a narrower path, but it's a path that they should be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they should be able to, in that conference, be the first place team or the second place team in that conference.
Got it.
And the conference tournament champion is going to get an automatic bid.
Right.
And the reason why the WCC got two bids, as Stephen pointed out, is UP won the conference tournament. Gonzaga still got in.
Right.
Because they had the better season. Now, UP was knocked out in the opening round. But if Oregon State next year, because this is the exact conversation I've had with coaches at Washington State and Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. I think they would publicly say this. They have told me, hey, we can do this for 1 year. We can sell our kids on the idea that we're going to play the Mountain West in football for a year, or we're going to play WCC and all these other sports for a year. But if you go beyond 1 year in a college kid's mind, it's eternity.
Right.
Like, it's too big.
Right.
And so I think what Ruick and any Dana Altman, whoever's selling, right? You know, if you're selling a recruit on a player or program, you're really selling them this next year.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter where you are. So the idea is to sell Reagan Beers, to sell Tamia Gardner, to sell your freshman point guard and say, hey, give me 1 year. And if we're in the same position in a year, I'll give you my blessing. You get into the portal, you can go. But let's see what we can turn this into. And then it buys you a year to kind of figure that out. But It's not a great position for a coach who deserves a lot better. Let's play the 5 at 5.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Warren Sapp joining the Colorado staff. He'll be a graduate assistant for Deion Sanders, interestingly. This is, the details of this are fascinating to me. So he recently earned a bachelor's degree from Texas Seminary Christian, but now he's enrolled in graduate classes at Colorado University. Coach Prime introduced Sapp to the team in a video. He said, "We're going to pour concrete because you know I like nice stuff. We're building mansions here. So that's why I'm here. To help you build your mansion and foundation, anything you need, come see me." I love how he sells his program. It's great.
A lot of flash, a lot of confidence. This is a big splashy move, getting Warren Sapp as your graduate assistant. This is a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He will be the quality control analyst for Colorado. He can be a graduate assistant, by the way, for up to 3 years, according to the NCAA, but this is a recruiting move by Colorado.
They had to clean it up a little because he introduced himself as senior quality control analyst, but analysts are not allowed to directly coach players on the field. So the school had to come back around and say, actually, he's going to be considered a graduate assistant. That means he can directly coach players
he's
on
a GA.
The field.
You are not the quality control analyst.
That's just funny.
Demoted on his first day.
Demoted himself.
Number 2.
All right, let's talk about women's basketball. The NCAA Women's Sweet 16 set viewership records. Massive numbers over the weekend. They got more viewers than they ever had.
How many?
Well, the Hawkeyes blowout victory drew an astounding 6.9 million viewers. That
strong.
Is the highest viewership ever for a women's Sweet 16.
That's strong.
The other matchups were pretty good, too. They were drawing 2 million. UCLA, LSU drew 3.8 million. But it was Iowa LSU that pulled in nearly 7 million viewers.
I think that will continue. It will be the biggest thing going on in the NCAA tournament. Some of it is linear versus cable. You know, as you start to compare apples and oranges, but those are strong numbers. I felt like we carried the men's games right here on 750 The Game on Thursday and Friday. We carried the men's games in the opening round. We carried the men's Sweet 16 games. I thought it was a misfire for us not to have the women's Elite Eight games yesterday carried right here on The Game. I think as long as we're talking about the differences between men's NCAA tournament coverage and women's NCAA tournament coverage, I was surprised that we didn't on this station carry the women's games. I thought it was right in line with everybody who's saying there's still some things out there that don't value the women's game as much as the men's game. And I hope I can be on record saying that. I guess I am. Moving on.
Number 3.
So much hype about this college football EA Sports video game. I know I'm contributing to it. Kirk Herbstreit's sharing some details ahead of this game's release. He's saying that the game will feature multiple broadcast crews for certain games. Chris Fowler's already mentioned his involvement in the game. Also, bowl season will be featured in College Football 25. Pop-Tarts Bowl confirmed they're being included. They're just reeling in. They're reeling on all the money and all the people and all the players, apparently. All the bowls are in the game, according to College Football Reporter Matt Brown.
Hey, let me ask you, Steven, do you play this EA Sports college, you know, like, would you play this game?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, the last one, I think, was NCAA Football 14. And, yeah, me and my brother, we play that. We play Dynasty Mode, and, you know, we go against each other head-to-head. I'll be recruiting everybody.
We have finally found something Steven is really into.
It's a yes for Steven. What?
I'm in. I'm all in.
Yes, dog.
So you'll be checking out the game trailer as it's released in May, huh?
100%, you know, yeah.
Here's what I don't like about this whole, all these video games today.
What's there not to like?
If I can get out on my front lawn here for a second.
Get on your front lawn.
You know, Steven, back in the day when we played Tecmo Bowl.
Ooh, good game.
We had four plays, okay? We had to call four plays. We didn't have to worry about hitting 17 different buttons to throw the ball and catch the ball and cycle through the plays. We had four plays that we could run. And in most cases, it was two runs and two passes.
See, I prefer Tecmo Super Bowl when you got four run plays, four pass plays.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson,
a little,
Eagles,
getting a little
Eagles
complicated
quarterback.
Now. Getting a little complicated. But here's the thing. Like, my nephew had one of these EA Sports games that was, I think it was an NFL-themed game. And I couldn't catch the damn ball. And like, you have to push a button to catch it?
That's a you problem.
I just wanted to call the play and sit back and watch Bo Jackson run.
I blame you as a coach. You got to coach your players up. Get them out there working out, you know, running routes after practice.
I didn't know I had to call the play and then execute it as well.
Number four.
Steven's favorite guy, Jason Kelce, has been contacted ahead of WrestleMania 40. You know, he's retired. So this feels like a story that his agent is putting out there 100%. But anyway, WWE has reached out to him ahead of WrestleMania, which will take place conveniently at the Eagles Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia this coming weekend. I can actually see Jason Kelce doing professional wrestling, couldn't you? He's kind of built for it. You know, we saw it. We saw how he looked when he was at that game and he was taking his shirt off and, you know,
he's got,
drawing all the attention to him.
Yeah, he's got the promoter part of it down. and maybe it bridges him to somewhere else after football. As we know, football careers are not forever. But I'm not sure he needs this.
No, he doesn't need it. This is like filling
a hole in his life. Going to be a professional wrestler.
Like, he just threw out the first pitch at Philadelphia, or he's going to do that. Like, it just seems like kind of, I mean, no offense to wrestling. I used to watch wrestling back in the day, but it's kind of a step down to where he could be, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's beneath him.
Huh. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it wouldn't be terrible for them to get him involved, since it would just get more eyes on wrestling, right? He brings with him enough viewership, I suppose.
I get why the wrestling people want it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's just some products you shouldn't, you know, endorse.
But
wrestling?
Look who else has done it. Gronkowski.
Now you sound like...
George Kittle.
Everybody's
Reggie
doing
White.
It. Everybody's doing it.
Dennis Rodman.
The Refrigerator.
You know.
Lawrence Taylor. Look at that list of people.
Pete Rose.
Hey, this is Travis Kelce for Pepto-Bismol. You know? For Preparation H.
Not yet. Too soon for him.
Okay.
Too soon.
Number five.
All right. Let's close out with Jake Gyllenhaal and...
Is it Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal?
I don't know. Conor McGregor. Their Roadhouse show debuted on Amazon Prime, and it becomes Amazon Prime's most watched debut with 50 million views. This is an action movie that apparently people are watching. I've heard about this. I've heard it's actually pretty good.
What have you heard?
I've just heard that it's very entertaining. It's a new spin on the Patrick Swayze 1989 cult classic, where UFC fighter Elwood Dalton, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, gets a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse.
Roadhouse. I don't like remakes, because in 1989, I thought Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott did it well.
Uh-huh.
So how can you, you know...
How can you improve on something that's already decent the first time around?
I found out why you're interested, Anna. Just Google Roadhouse 2024 and look at images. It's a lot of Jake Gyllenhaal shirtless, muscular.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do it for me, but... Mm. Did you know his lineage is actual, like, tied to Swedish royalty?
I actually think I might be in better shape than him.
Prove it.
Prove it. You're talking about his lineage. I'm like tensing up my abdominal muscles right now.
You even work out, bro?
Bro.
Let me oil myself down so I can prove it.
Our kids called us bro the other day. It was really irritating.
Wait till they call actually, you bruh.
Bruh. They actually bruh. Said bruh. And I was like, no.
That a thing?
We're not doing that in our household.
Is that a thing?
Oh, it's a thing. Yeah, my kids
it's
do the same thing.
It's been a thing. Yeah. I think we're a little late to that.
Well, there you go. WWE, by the way, is... Do you think they're just trying to get with the Kelsey's to try to get to Taylor Swift? Can they get her to an event? I mean, is that part of all of this for everybody who's like, is Kelsey like, is getting Jason Kelsey and then Travis Kelsey? Like, is that the step? The next step is they're like, maybe Taylor Swift will show up.
Isn't
it just to get the football fans? Like, I don't think they necessarily need Taylor Swift. It's just more football fans because it kind of goes together.
But if it was just football fans, they would be talking to other recently retired football players, right?
Like, if you were the, if you were WWE and you just wanted football fans, you get Tom Brady out there doing some stuff.
Yeah.
You get the Kelsey's. I guess the Kelsey's make sense because I can see their personalities fitting.
Yeah, they have like the number one podcast in the world right now.
And also,
Wait, really?
Yeah, it got voted like best podcast by the iHeart Radio Podcast Awards.
That WrestleMania event is in Philadelphia,
right?
Too. Yeah, I know. So it's why you know it's easy,
convenient, yeah,
for the guy who has his shirt on.
So people reaching out to Jason Kelsey to get him to WWE is like people looking for career day speakers, and they reach out to me and Steven, but really what they want is you.
You said it, not me. You said
facts,
it.
Facts.
Anna gets invited to career day and they're like, oh, are you bringing John?
Like, no, it's just me. Is that okay?
Show business.
Is that okay?
Show business.
I'll bring Steven with me. How's that?
Steven.
I'd be great there.
What would your advice be, Steven, to kids these days?
Nothing. I got no advice for anybody.
Nothing.
Well, I asked the attorney that in hour one. We had the attorney on. By the way, did you hear that interview? You missed it, huh?
The guy who
noticed the lines.
It was an attorney?
He was an attorney.
Not an accountant?
Family law attorney. Who was in the 300 level. He's at the game by himself.
Yeah.
He looks down and he goes, I can't be the first person that's noticed this. And then he tells the guy in front of him. The guy in front of him happens to know one of the ushers that's down on the floor.
Yeah.
Sends a text to one of the people down on the floor saying, hey, take a look at this photo.
Wow.
Then they got it to the officials, and then they brought out the tape measure, and then...
That's how it all happened?
You know, that's... I mean, what did you think?
I like that you got to the bottom of that. I'm surprised it was an attorney. I would have thought it was like an insurance risk management type person.
I wasn't going to pursue it, okay?
Yeah.
I wasn't going after it.
Okay.
But then I went on Jason Puckett's podcast, and he said, hey, have you found out... who it was, and then I went, damn it, why did you raise that in my mind? And then he says, so later I texted Puck, and I said, I found the guy, and he goes, of course you did.
Yeah.
Because he knew.
Yeah, that all happened today, within hours.
It happened within, it was like a 15-minute thing, where I was like, okay, I'll go find this guy.
Wow.
But, you know, I think it's a Kevin Bacon game. Everything's the Kevin Bacon game. You know, it's the 6 degrees of separation, or... You know, if you name an actor, you can create a connection to Kevin Bacon.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You can.
Believe that. I feel like that's an urban myth.
No, it's not. But. It's 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
If you basically you choose an actor and then we can connect that actor or actress to a movie that Kevin Bacon's been in.
Yeah.
Because somebody else.
I know.
Jake Gyllenhaal guy or whatever his name is.
That guy, yeah. I'm sure he's been in something.
He's been
connected to Kevin Bacon, sure.
He might have even been in a movie with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
That's the thing. So
was the attorney proud that he figured this out?
Just a little bit in disbelief, I think. Okay. Steven, you heard the interview. I think he was in disbelief. I think he also was like, you know, I can't be the only person that's seen this. And then everyone keeps asking him, like, how did you notice it? And he says, how do you not notice it?
Yeah, he wasn't proud. I wouldn't say he was proud. He was more like, I can't believe I'm the only person that's noticed it. Like you said, like, this is so easy. Why is no one else saying anything?
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought he was really humble in saying, this is my 15 seconds of fame and nobody knows who I am anyway. And, you know, he also said that he thinks the NCAA should give him a job, have him go around like undercover boss.
Yeah.
To football games and basketball games and just make sure everything is where it should be.
Oh, he's already angling for a side hustle?
But do you do this? Because I'm a writer.
Okay.
If I'm driving down, let's say I'm on the 205.
Okay.
Or the 5.
Okay.
And I'm driving.
Yeah.
Or Highway 99.
Why not the 84?
Any of these roads.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm driving, I'll read billboards. And I see grammatical mistakes punctuation mistakes, mm-hmm. and they drive me bonkers.
Yes.
I want to pull over and knock the billboard down.
Same.
And fix it.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wonder if you see stuff like that, or is it an occupational hazard? Like, Stephen, do you do that if you're listening to other radio? Do you hear the mistakes that are made?
Yeah, I do. I can notice them now, and it drives me nuts where I feel like other people don't even notice it at all. But like when you're in it, like you said, you understand that one little thing bothers you. I was listening to a show today and it was like, it took like a whole second before they started the intro music. Drove me nuts.
Yep.
A whole second.
It was a second of dead air. I just hated every second of it.
That's funny.
I think it matters. Like one time I can remember, here's one. I was writing a headline early in my career,
mm-hmm.
for a story that had been written about somebody, re-signing with a team.
Okay.
But instead of re-sign, I put RE sign,
ooh,
which is resign.
Right.
Okay. There's a big difference between someone resigning and someone re-signing.
Literally, the difference couldn't be any whiter.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And I had that in a headline, and one of my colleagues caught it and said, hey, you don't want to say that.
Uh-huh.
I saw a headline the other day, and it was students get first, it should have been first hand job experience.
Oh no.
But they went students get first hand job experience.
Wow.
That's the headline in a Kansas Pratt, Kansas newspaper.
That is really unfortunate.
Should have been students get first hand job experience.
Yeah. That was done on purpose.
Do you think? I don't know if it was.
No, someone just didn't pay attention to the spacing, which was really important in that sentence.
And it should have been first hand job experience. Not first hand, you know.
The worst situations I found were like in television news, you have a breaking news situation. Everybody's trying to, you know, get on air first with the accurate information. And that's when mistakes sometimes happen. And on a weekend where I was anchoring, we had a shooting in northeast Portland. And the graphic that went on air was not, in fact, shots fired.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'll let you figure that out.
Well, that was a couple weeks ago. Skip Bayless had the same thing in one of his tweets. I don't know if you saw this, John. It's about the Cowboys.
No, I didn't.
He, because, you know, the Cowboys, Jerry Jones said they were all in. So Skip Bayless wrote, all in, comma, my ass.
Oh.
No comma. That would not have been great.
Oh, well.
Punctuation.
Punctuation matters. Be careful out there.
That's my advice. Pay attention to punctuation in school, kids.
Yeah, be careful out there. All right, leave it here. We got more ahead.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I found it really weird that the college teams didn't seem to perform any worse or any better with the three-point line being 9 inches shorter at its apex. And maybe it's not that big a deal because, as we now know, because you can see it on the visual images of the court when they fixed it in the Portland Regional. You know, the issue was really just at the top of the key. And then as you went down the arc on each side, it was still the same 3-point line. But I just found it interesting. Like, I was watching, you mentioned long twos. Steven, there were a couple that, like, Juju Watkins at one point late in the game where I think she wanted to shoot a three, ended up with her foot right on the line. And I don't know if that was accidental or she just pulled up when she pulled up, but I thought of you when that happened. But did it surprise you a little bit that the shooting percentage from 3-point range, even on the mislined side of the court, was about the same?
No, it doesn't surprise me. But yeah, I think because we talked about this yesterday, you're not looking exactly where the line is or where exactly you are on the court on your shots, right? You're like, you're kind of glancing out of your peripherals to see where you are. You've shot so many shots in your life, you can just look at the hoop and kind of know how to shoot that shot. So I think, you know, in that situation, yeah, maybe Juju didn't want to take that two. She wanted to take a three, and she just kind of glanced down, saw the line, and you know, went to it. But to me, it's not surprising that the percentages were about even, because, you know, these players are so good. Like, even on the college level, there's so much skill in the game. Like, they're just going to make these shots.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for those of us who didn't play college basketball, there's, you know, we're in a gym somewhere playing. I do pay attention to the 3-point line when I go to shoot, and I'm not looking down at it, but I have a feel for where it is. So I just kind of wonder, like, you know, from an NBA shooter's perspective, there's this great story about, like, you know, Bill Bradley, former NBA player, went on to a career in politics, shooting baskets and telling someone, you know, that's interesting. And they go, what? And then he continues to shoot baskets and he says, your rim's off by about an inch. And they measured it and the rim was off by an inch and an eighth. Like, he knew that. He could feel that. And I don't know, Steven, if you've ever walked into a gym as a visiting player and you start shooting and you're like, something's not quite right, or it's just a little different. You know, have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, I've had it where I feel like the hoop is a little off, like it's a little lower than 10 feet. It's like, you know, 9.11 and a half or like 9.11, and it's not quite 10 feet. And then it's just like, it seems a little weird. In high school at Putnam, we kind of had some weird hoops, and we always felt like the one of the hoops was never aligned in the perfect center of the actual key. Now, I don't know if it was true or not, but it just always kind of felt the way. So, yeah, I think there's certain gyms where you can't just kind of look at the hoop and you're like, that seems a little off. And then you just kind of adjust to it, but it throws me off. I don't know if it throws a lot of other people off, but it always throws me off. It would take me a little bit to adjust to those type of things.
We, in our driveway, the hoop is set at about 9.5 feet, and it's just because the slope of the driveway. And I'm a much better shooter at 9.5 feet than I am at 10. I just got to say, I'm going to point that out. All right, we got some parting thoughts coming up on the BFT. I want you here for it. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We got the women's Final Four. Betting lines are out. Spreads are out. The men's Final Four betting lines are out. I want to kind of break down the two Final Four brackets. If we were just filling out a bracket and it was just a Final Four bracket, you've got heavily favored South Carolina in the women's bracket trying to get back to the national championship game. They will be taking on North Carolina State. You have Caitlin Clark in Iowa taking on UConn for the other spot in the national championship game. Steven, I want to break this down a little bit. North Carolina State, South Carolina. Right now, North Carolina State is a 11.5-point underdog to the Gamecocks. This game obviously is going to be held in Cleveland, Ohio at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. 32-0 in the regular season, South Carolina. North Carolina State was 27-6. South Carolina's got great, great depth, great players. You know, probably 90% of the time they win this game. But North Carolina State is playing with a lot of confidence, has great guard play. Do you have a feel on South Carolina, North Carolina State?
Yeah, I mean, I think South Carolina wins this game. You know, I'm with you. I think it's very high percentage that South Carolina advances the title of the game. But you look at the point spread. It's a lot of points, John. And last two games, South Carolina has not covered those spreads. Oregon State, they got all the way up to 16. Oregon State lost by 12. Then the Indiana game, you know, they only won by 4 points, went right down the wire. And I think the Oregon State game was even a lot closer than that 12 points. I mean, Oregon State was right in that ball game. Kind of got away from it late. So I think right now I would lead NC State plus the points and just hold my nose and hope that it happens. But I think South Carolina, because they have the potential to just blow anybody out at any point of the time. We've seen that all season long. I think South Carolina wins this game. But I think right now, you know what, I would take NC State plus the points, and I would take all those, and hopefully it would be a somewhat closer of a game.
There's a feel to South Carolina that this is a team that is on a mission, has been on a mission since last year, to get back to the national title game and to win it. North Carolina State, to me, this team this year felt like, you know, getting to the Final Four was it. And I watched that celebration as they, you know, won the Portland Regional for that bracket and it cut down the nets and all that. You know, I thought it was, you know, it felt to me a little bit like that was the destination, getting to the Final Four. So I like South Carolina in that game. I just think they're too good. And I think the better game, though, is the other game, the other semifinal. It's UConn. It's Iowa. Iowa's a 2.5-point favorite. I actually think the spread is wrong on this game. I think UConn should be favored. And I think UConn and Iowa is a coin toss. I think that should be a pick 'em or a slight favorite to UConn. I know UConn's beat up. I know they got some injuries. But right now, Iowa is -185 on the money line. UConn's +110. I would not be surprised to see UConn win that game. I think it's going to be a hell of a game.
I actually agree with you. I'm going to make that bet actually with the UConn money line. I think UConn wins this game. I think Paige Beckers is out. She's out for, you know, to be the player of the year, player of the, you know, the tournament, and we'll see what happens. But you know, I put a lot of trust in Gino Auriemma. Like, you know, we forget how great of a coach he's been his entire career at UConn, maybe the best of all time. I think he's gonna have some type of game plan. He's playing that, you know, that game with Caitlin Clark of, look, you know, you're the best ever. You know, I'm not trying to make this personal. I think that he's going to have some type of game plan to slow her down. Obviously, you're never going to stop her. She's awesome. She's going to put up 30 and probably 10, but it may be a little more difficult than it has been throughout the NCAA tournament. So I actually think UConn gets the win over Iowa, and it'll be a South Carolina UConn championship.
I agree with you. But I actually think the Iowa UConn thing's a coin toss. And so I just think the spread's wrong. I just don't think Iowa should be a 2.5-point favorite, but I get why they are. It's because America loves the hype machine and hype train. And I think, you know, if anything, I would have made UConn about a point and a half favorite in that game if I think it's a real spread. So keep an eye on it. I like UConn's roster. I think it's more than just one player at UConn. I think they have two or three possible WNBA starters on that roster. And so I think they're good enough, deep enough to get there, even with all the injuries. And I love watching that game last night where you had UConn playing and, you know, UConn was playing against USC. And I think they just did a really good job as a coaching staff, putting their players in position to succeed. I thought coaching was a big factor in that UConn USC game.
And Caitlin Clark, you know, she's the undoubted best player in the game, but you look number two, number three, number four, probably number five, maybe all on UConn's roster still, even with the injuries. So, like, I'm with you. It's the depth versus the star power of Caitlin Clark. Can Caitlin Clark basically, you know, will her team to a victory? She can. She has done it before, but I'm with you. There's the combination of the depth UConn has of the talent and Gino Auriemma. I'll take UConn in this one.
Let's pivot to the men's Final Four. Now that we've talked about the women's, you've got Saturday's games, Saturday, Monday schedule, for the men's Final Four. You've got, obviously Purdue, North Carolina State, Purdue, an 8.5-point favorite. And let's start with that game. NC State is one of these teams that is just a team of destiny on a roll, finding a way. 8 straight elimination games. They found a way to win. They now run into Zach Edey and Purdue. Steven, I like Purdue to win the game, but North Carolina State makes me nervous.
Yeah, I like Purdue to win. it's fascinating because DJ Burns on NC State, really good player, really fun player to watch, you know, has a lot of fun out there. Bigger guy, but he's, you know, 6'9", you know, probably 290 or something, just out there having a good old time. But I was going against a monster of a man, Zachy, 7'4". Like, that's a different type of thing when DJ Burns isn't athletic. Like, he can't jump, really. Zachy's going to be able to stand there. I don't know how he's going to score. Like, it's going to be tough, and he's been killing it. So I actually think I'm going to lay Purdue in this one. I think Purdue is on a mission to get to the championship game. They have really good guards around them. You know, Braden Smith's a really good point guard. He's been playing well. But Zach Edey, man, he puts up 30 and, you know, 15 every single game for Purdue. And I think that's just, it's so hard to go against a 7'4 guy who doesn't foul. I think in the last game he played all but 20 seconds or so in the Elite Eight. Like, you get that guy to play the entire game, that's tough to go against. So I like Purdue, and I like Purdue to win pretty big over NC State.
I like that when Purdue cut the nets down, Edey didn't need a ladder. He just reached up and snip, snip, took the net down. In the other semifinal, it'll be the nightcap on Saturday, 5:49 tip Pacific time. UConn against Alabama. It's a 1 seed against a 4 seed. Alabama, to me, was about the third or fourth best team in the SEC. They've played well enough to get to this point, and like on the women's side, when I said North Carolina State may be just happy to be in the Final Four, I feel like Alabama's wearing that on the men's side of this tournament. Just, are they just happy to be there? UConn's too good, too deep. I think UConn's going to beat them by double digits. I don't know what UConn will do against Purdue, but I don't see UConn not getting to the title game. I think they get right past Alabama.
Yeah, the thing about Alabama is their defense is one of the worst. Like, not even like in the conference, like one of the worst in the nation all season long. But this NCAA tournament, they've played a little bit better, but that offense is so explosive. It's one of those things where it's a high variance of their outcomes of games. Like, they can beat anybody on any given night. They also can give up 95 to a team. I believe the first round they gave up like 85 to Charleston. So, like, against a team like UConn, you're going to have to score about 95 if you're Alabama. I just think that's unlikely to do. I'm with you. I want to have it to be a close game because, you know, I like my guy Henry Barrera, yeah. But I think UConn gets the win. I think they cover the spread, too.
Look, Greg Berg, the Alabama AD, has come on the show a number of times. You know, I was happy for him. I sent him a text saying, congrats, you're in the Final Four. Big surprise, I think, that Alabama got to that point. But they're up against a UConn team that's just, you know, it's playing at a different level.
It's a different monster that UConn team is.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and you look, I like the contrast of Purdue with Zach Edey against UConn because I just like to see the difference in style, the difference in approach on the offensive side in particular. But I don't think anybody's beaten UConn in this tournament. I think UConn's going to win it.
I agree. I think UConn, they seem like, you talk about NC State team of destiny. I think UConn, they're playing the no one believes in us card already. They're doing the Georgia thing. I think they have something to prove still.
Everybody does that. You know, I guess you rally around that. Damian Lillard, nobody believes in me. I never had a chance. You know, we should just start saying, nobody believed in this radio show, and here we are.
That's right.
17, almost 18 years later. Here we are, against all odds. Grab a podcast. Believe in this show, please.